to stop what you're doing and listen.
You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert and Derek Johnson on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
Hey, what's happening? Welcome. This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk, FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. With Derek Johnson, I'm Nick Schwert. Happy to have you with us on a lovely Thursday afternoon. Scott Chasen joins us at 4. We will have our weekly football draft. We're going to be drafting football teams using Game of Thrones characters. I don't want any book references here.
No.
Nobody's going to be drafting any players that... What was the book? The Song of
Ice and Fire, I think is the first one. Yeah.
We drafted those guys that didn't appear in the TV show. Did you read the books?
So I like started reading the first book, and I'm probably like three quarters of the way through it, which is funny. Like I kind of stopped right before coronavirus happened. You think it would be the opposite? Because like I lost motivation. I started thinking about it, and I was like, is he going to actually ever finish the book series? Is George R. R. Martin actually going to do this? And it's like, I would be even more disappointed with myself if I finished all the books and then he just never finishes them.
Well, you know what was annoying was that when the show started to get ahead of the books and critics, the people who had read the books, started criticizing the TV show, saying they were deviating from the story. And George R. R. Martin was, kind of, in a way, he was kind of criticizing them as well, saying, you know, I didn't write this storyline. I haven't even got to this point. Just finish them then, man.
You still haven't.
Didn't he write the first one a long time ago?
Yeah, I think it was like the 80s or 90s.
Just finish them, dude. The show's really good. If you want to keep being good, like, what are you doing? Going to too many red carpet events. Going to too many celebrity galas.
Yeah, it was 1996.
How old is that guy?
He's getting
clock's going to be ticking, right?
That's what I'm saying. There's no way, because I think he still has to finish two books.
Well, I don't know. It's up to him, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not happening.
72, so.
He's made into this now. Like, there's no motivation there.
You think that's what it is? He doesn't have that fire in his belly?
The last one was made in 2011. 9 years, bud. What you doing during the coronavirus?
Maybe he's a perfectionist. Maybe the show has ruined his creative ability.
But every other book is kind of, so the first one, 96, then 2 years later, 2 years later, 5 years later, 6 years later. What's up?
I've never read the book of a movie I've watched. Ever.
Like you've never read a book and then there's been a movie about it?
Or vice versa. Okay. Yeah. So I don't know, but everybody who seems to read any book always says the book is better than the movie.
Yes, that is, if we were to do like the most, I don't know, like cliche things that people say, just in like general, that would be in the top 10, I think.
Why don't we do the reverse, though? Why don't we make movies and then somebody writes a book about it afterwards?
It's like that the book was terrible compared to the movie.
That's what it would be. The response would always be, well, I saw the movie first. Like they write a book on Top Gun. Like, I don't know. The book didn't really capture the relationship between Goose and Maverick as well as the movie did. By the way, speaking of Tom Cruise, the space movie got a director.
Oh, I forgot about that.
So that is going to happen.
Who?
By the way.
Christopher Nolan?
I don't know. This guy I'd never heard of.
I mean, I was hoping it was Christopher Nolan. Then there's just like a bunch of explosions in space. Did you see he blew up like an actual, we're just going on a tailspin here, but he blew up Christopher Nolan for the new movie Tenet. He blew up an actual like Boeing 747
because he said it would be cheaper than
he was like, yeah,
doing it CGI.
Just easier than CGI. We're just going to blow up a whole plane.
Yeah. I hope that movie is released. I hope the theaters are open and we can go see that because that would, like I said, that would really put me to the test. That would really put my anxiety to the test. You ready to venture out into the real world for real? There are two places you can go to really prove to people that you don't care about coronavirus, that you're not afraid of it. Bowling alleys and movie theaters. You go to either one of those places, you don't have to explain to us how you feel. We know. We get it. You went to a bowling alley. You're good. No, we'll take your word for it. Same thing with a movie theater. Are movie theaters open? at all?
I know Regal is not. As time stands, they just like tweeted something out yesterday.
This is going to be the resurgence of drive-in theaters.
I know. We need a drive-in theater in Lawrence, specifically for a time like this.
I think every theater should pivot back to drive-in theaters. Why did we get away from that in the first place?
I don't know. You get your own private, personal space. Drive-in theaters are fun. I used to love those as a kid.
Never been to one, but I love the idea of it.
Yeah, I mean, I probably only went like once or twice, but like I had fun. And maybe it was just because I was nine and like my parents bought me candy, but...
Get a little hatchback.
Yeah.
Sit in the back, put a blanket down, bring your own snacks. It's a great idea. I think we should get back to it. We're going to have Scott on at 4 o'clock, so we'll do that draft later on in the 4 o'clock hour. Yesterday, it was made public the Major League Baseball's counter proposal, or I guess their revision of the first proposal that they sent to the Players Association to resume baseball. As has been the case the whole time, the big hang-up there has been how Major League Baseball and the Players Association are going to split the revenue. They agreed upon a deal back in March, right when this thing began, and the owners are saying, no, you guys are getting too much money. I think the figure that they cited was that because tickets are a 3% revenue, with this 50-50 revenue split that the players want, the owners are saying that that would somehow give the players 89% of their revenue. And all of the figures that the owners are going to bring to the table are going to, in some way, shape, or form, show how they're getting screwed over. They're going to have to take all the losses, and the players are being selfish, and they should have just accepted the deal. And you're getting some of that from the media, from fans who are saying, come on, we need baseball. It's good for the sport. Just take it for 1 year, move on, and we'll get back to normal after that. Yesterday, we told you about a piece from Ken Rosenthal on The Athletic, who had cited one agent who anonymously said that he had never seen the players so galvanized on an issue, and that almost unanimously the players were not even considering this to be an acceptable proposal. Today, Ken Rosenthal, again on The Athletic, shares that the players have, and I don't know if this is an official counter-proposal, but what they are kind of saying in response to the proposal that Major League Baseball sent. Max Scherzer, who is on the executive subcommittee for the MLBPA, he tweeted out last night that, quote, after discussing the latest developments with the rest of the players, there is no reason to engage with Major League Baseball in any further compensation reductions. We have previously negotiated a pay cut in the version of a prorated salary, and there's no justification to accept a second pay cut based upon the current information the union has received. I'm glad to hear other players voicing the same viewpoint and believe MLB's economic strategy would completely change if all documentation were to become public information. We talked about this yesterday. You see what he keeps kind of circling back on, which is, I think, at the crux of this impasse between Major League Baseball and the Players Association. Yes, they're arguing over the revenue split. Yes, the players don't want to accept any more pay cuts. But at the bottom of this dilemma is the fact that Major League Baseball is not giving you the full story. They're not giving you all of the data that would be necessary to have an honest conversation about what is really fair in order to get baseball going once again.
Right. Perfect example. So one of the things is that the MLB owners saying that the more games we play, that the less money we're going to have. We're going to lose more money per game played. And like, here's a perfect example of kind of twisting your words or twisting how it's seen. The owners would say that, well, okay, let's just take a number. Let's just make it easy. Let's say they lose $100,000, or let's just make it an even easier number. Let's say they lose $1 million per game without fans. It's not that much. It's probably closer to the $100,000 than it is a million. Maybe it is. I don't know. You lose $1 million per game without fans. The owners are saying, okay, if we're losing $1 million per game without fans, if we play 80 games, that means we're losing $80 million because it's without fans. If we play even more games, if we play 120 games, that means we're losing $120 million without fans. We play the full season, we're losing $160 million without fans. But that's not correct math. They're twisting it to sound like that way, when in reality, the correct math is saying, no, you're not getting fans no matter what. So you're already starting from that point. You had a 162-game season with fans. You were set to make, if that number were right, $162 million just from fans. Whether you play one game, whether you play zero, whether you play 162, you're still losing that full amount of money. And that's an example of something the owners have done to try to push things to their side, to say that, well, more games we play, more money we lose, when the math is not actually accurate there.
No, and that's what they want. They want a lack of information to cause dishonest conversations. They want the players to be pressured into taking this deal, whether it's being pressured from people within Major League Baseball, like other players, maybe on the lower end of the salary scale, or outside pressure from the fans, from the media. The issue that they're running into here is that, at least in terms of trying to create dissension amongst the players, it's not working at all. I mean, correct me if I haven't seen one player speak out and say, come on, we need to take this deal.
No.
Has anybody done that publicly? Anyone? One player?
No. I mean, I even saw your boy, Trevor Plouffe, who he's a former player.
How many times are we going to reference Trevor Plouffe this summer?
I'm going to try to reference him every day at possible if I can. But he was saying, like, he said he'd heard from, like, a bunch of players, and he's kind of speaking on behalf of some, because there's some that are fine kind of voicing their displeasure out on social media or in the public. Others, I'm sure, are displeased, but they don't want to put themselves out there like that. But he was saying that just, like, everything would go away if the owners just released their books. If they just released, and not even their books, so that, like, the players could, like, sift through, oh, what were their taxes that they paid in, like, 2017. Not for that. They just want to see how the MLB, how the owners got to whatever point they did among all these claims about we're going to lose this amount of money, we need to play this amount of games. They just want, because it's easy for us to be able to Google, name your player, Mike Trout contract. Go on Google, type it in, you'll find it.
It's all public.
All public. But you don't know anything about the owner's situation to where, again, they're not trying to make this like a situation of we're trying to see if you're committing fraud or something like that. It's just they're trying to say, hey, if you show us how you got to these numbers, because right now you're just making claims that you're going to lose this types of numbers. And I was listening to a podcast with, it was like the Ryan Russillo show, and Jeff Passan of ESPN was on there, and he was saying he got a text from like an anonymous GM. It was some like movie quote, and I'm just kind of paraphrasing here, something along the lines of, good accountants can make $1 million loss or $1 million gain look like a $2 million loss. So you actually made $1 million, but you make it look like you lose $2 million, and then you get like tax benefits, for instance. So it would not be that crazy for these owners to be able to twist this, just like I said with the fan attendance thing, to make it look like they're losing more or losing certain aspects that they're not actually losing. And then the players are in a situation where, because they can't actually see the owner's books, they don't know how they got to that number. So that's what they want.
They're trying to make a massive deal without providing essential information, and the Players Association isn't balking at it.
Yeah, it's like if you were taking calculus in college or high school or something, and you know how like in math tests you get like graded for not just the what you get for the answer, you get graded for showing your work? Well, it's just like the owners, they just like immediately wrote the answer for everyone. You're just like, well, how'd you get there?
I think what the owners have done is they were arrogant to the point of starting these negotiations with the assumption that because everyone involved is incentivized to play baseball this year, whatever proposal they send to the MLBPA, no matter how bad it may be for the Players Association, it's going to be a step in the right direction of resuming baseball, because there's only one end goal. There's only one end game from both sides, is that we got to play baseball. There's going to be a way to do it. We've just got to figure it out. The issue that they've now run into is, instead of that proposal being the beginning of getting back to baseball, it now feels like it's the beginning of the end of the season. Mm-hmm. It was the first step taken in almost assuring that there won't be baseball played. Because, again, even as we sit here right now, as we talked about this yesterday, we're both pessimistic on the idea that a deal is going to get done and that they will play baseball this season. As pessimistic as you want to be, the Players Association and everybody involved is still sitting here today thinking, we've got to get a deal done. There has to be a deal made. The problem is there's a big barrier in between them getting that deal done in their minds, which is they are doing everything in their power to make sure we don't play. Both sides are thinking that right now, even though they know in their heart of hearts there's a deal to get done. But right now it does feel like it's the beginning of the end. It really does, because the players and that trust that they had, if there was any to begin with the owners, is now gone. And No matter what they do to come back, unless they start providing detailed answers on some of the biggest questions that the Players Association has, we're not going to get any closer to getting a finalized deal.
Right, and I think that's what you saw in the MLBPA's response. It was almost from a standpoint of like, okay, you play, obviously, fantasy football. Like, a lot of people play fantasy football. You ever have that person, like, in your league who, when they try to, like, negotiate a trade with you, they start from, like, the lowest possible point? So, like, let's say they want to get, like, Patrick Mahomes off your team. They offer you, I don't know, like, O.J. Howard for Patrick Mahomes. And then you're just like, what? Why did you do that? And they're like, well, I was just hoping that we would find some middle ground in between there, and I was just trying to start the offer. It's like, that's not how this works. But that's kind of what the owners were doing. And so I think that was this response from the players to not just say, hey, we're giving ground. What we wanted was the prorated salary. Instead of now finding a middle ground between that and what the owners just proposed, they were like, fine, if you want to stick your heels in the ground, we're going to take a step back as well. Because now we're not just asking for prorated salary. We're asking for a 110-game season. You're going to have to pay us even more.
Yeah, it's like almost as if they feel like they've been disrespected. Did you see what Scott Boras had to say? Scott Boras, who represents, I believe, 71 players in Major League Baseball, which is more than any other agency, he sent an email out to all of his clients, and he's got guys on every end of the spectrum there. He's got Garrett Cole, but he's got guys who are making a lot less money than that as well. And he essentially, in his email to his clients, said to them, don't let them push you around. Don't bail them out, I think was the phrase that he used. He said in the email, because the Associated Press obtained it and wrote about it today, this is Scott Boras. He's, quote, owners are asking for more salary cuts to bail them out of the investment decisions they've made. If this was just about baseball, playing games would give the owners enough money to pay the players their full prorated salaries and run the baseball organization. The owners' current problem is a result of the money they borrowed when they purchased their franchises, renovated their stadiums, or developed land around their ballparks. This type of financial financing is allowed and encouraged by MLB because it has resulted in significant franchise valuations. Owners now want players to take an additional pay cut to help them pay these loans. They want a bailout. They're not offering players a share of the stadiums, ballpark villages, or the club itself, even though salary reductions would help owners pay for these valuable franchise assets. These billionaires want the money for free. No bank would do that. Banks demand loans be repaid with interest. Players should be entitled to the same respect. It's hard to argue with some of the things that he's saying, and being an agent for so long and a very powerful one at that grants him access to information that a lot of other people around baseball may not have. And he doesn't get into a ton of specifics there. But I think the overall thesis of his statement there is that this is more than just about looking at the numbers for this season and saying, okay, let's find a fair deal. The owners know they're taking losses aside from what's even being discussed here, right? Because, and they know they can't bring it to the table. They know they can't use that as a bargaining chip, because if they did, the players would scoff. They'd say, we don't care. We don't care that you made these financial decisions that you're now having to take a hit. Nobody forced you to do that. And it certainly has nothing to do with us. Now, you feel like this would be a widely accepted statement, but Trevor Bauer, Cincinnati, is he with the Reds still?
Yeah.
He did name him. He tweeted yesterday, he said, hearing a lot of rumors about a certain player agent meddling in MLBPA affairs. If true, I have one thing to say. Scott Boras, rep your clients however you want to, but keep your damn personal agenda out of union business. Why would you not want a powerful person basically standing on your side and helping fight for you?
I don't know. Does he think that, like, Scott Boras was basically trying to say, accept the deal so we can play baseball so I can make money?
But that's not what Scott Boras
I know. That's what's weird. But this Scott Boras, I think, comment came after Trevor Bauer's comment. So I almost wonder if Trevor Bauer thought he was doing that, and then Scott Boras was like, no, that's not what I'm trying to do. Let me release a statement.
Well, he probably knew that Scott Boras was saying something, but maybe he didn't know exactly what the message was that he was sending out to his players. Now, Scott Boras is financially incentivized to get as much money for his players as possible, and I don't know how that would work from an agent's perspective. Right, you get a certain percentage for negotiating the deal. Does that percentage stick with the prorated salaries? If Gerrit Cole is making $36 million a year, is all of a sudden making $7.4 million or whatever that is, does that mean a significant pay reduction for him too?
I mean, probably, because that wouldn't be fair to, like, Gerrit Cole if, I don't know, if you were giving up. I don't know how much you give up. Is it less than 10%? Probably, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
Let's just say it's 10%. If you were giving up 10% of $36 million, you're giving up $3.6 million. So now if you're only making $7 million, you're giving up half your salary to Scott Boras. It would have to be based on what they're making.
It's very clear what Major League Baseball is trying to do, but without the explicit details. And I hope that if this thing continues to drag on, instead of the frustration being sent towards the players for not getting a deal done, because that's what will happen. Even if you think there is a small minority of fans who are mad, whatever the discrepancy may be there, whether it's most fans are siding with the players or most fans are haters, the fact remains that the longer this drags on, the more people will start to get frustrated with the players. The more fans will say, okay, enough is enough. If you're one week in, it's no big deal. You get 2, 3, 4 weeks down the line, a month or two down the line, the frustration starts to grow. And I'm sure that Major League Baseball is all for that. They want frustration to go, and they want the players to cave in to fan pressure. But what I hope is that if that happens, and if this drags on for weeks and weeks on end, I would hope that more fans would say, okay, but why are we here? Why are the players not taking this deal? Is it just because they want more money, or is there more to it? And as we know, of course, in these complex business negotiations, there's so many different layers to it. And the problem is the owners are refusing to peel any of those layers back. But maybe the players keep putting pressure on them, and that forces the owners to show their hand a little bit. But until they do, I don't think we're going to get anywhere. It's about 3:30. He's Derek Johnson, and I'm Nick Schwert. This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk. This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk. I am Nick Schwert. He is Derek Johnson. Thanks for rolling with us today. Coming up in about 20 minutes or so, Derek, myself, and our next guest, Scott Chasen of Fog.net, will be engaging in our weekly football draft, this week drafting from a pool of Game of Thrones characters, so you won't want to miss that. That's coming up in a bit, but Scott joins us now on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. What's up, man?
Not much. Hey, Nick, have you ever been able to do a pull-up?
Have I ever been able to do a pull-up?
Yeah, like, do you do pull-ups ever?
Yeah, I could do one right now. I don't have a pull-up bar in the studio, but yes, the last time I attempted to do a pull-up, I did so successfully. I'm not saying I'm going to crank out like 10 to 20 of them, but I could do a couple.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of in the same boat as Nick. Why?
I was just curious. Just general question. No real reason for asking.
You had no real reason for asking whether or not we could do a pull-up.
Yeah, sometimes I like to throw you both a curveball, keep you on your toes, especially when I'm completely unprepared for the drafts we have going on, and you text me a couple hours.
But you didn't throw us. You didn't throw us for a curve because we're professional broadcasters, so we get peppered with questions and we know how to answer them. So now we're just sitting here like fools, waiting for you to explain what the punchline is to whatever joke you're trying to tell.
Yeah, there really is no punchline. I was honestly, what sparked the thought was John Calipari's daughter. I don't know if you saw this. Tweeted out something to the effect of her dad left her briefcase at home and she opened it and there was money inside. And then I think she realized very quickly that could be misconstrued and deleted it. And then sent out the following tweet 12 minutes ago quote, really confused about my mentions right now, where tons of people think my dad carrying $20 in a briefcase is somehow incriminating. Then I was, anyway, searching around on her page, and she has a video doing pull-ups, and so that sparked the thought. But I am curious, any of the three of us believe her dad had $20 just floating around in a briefcase?
Well, are we of the expectation that coaches shouldn't carry any cash on them, otherwise they are somehow going to be implicated in some sort of deed?
No, but I resent the notion of, one, she doesn't understand why, like, Twitter had a field day with saying her dad had a briefcase full of money that he left. And two, there's no way someone just has $20 in a briefcase. Why would you just have $20? Like, you either have a dollar that's, like, accidentally in there in coins, or you have, like, $150 or something. No one has $20.
Wait a minute, though, but who... I'm dead serious. I don't know if I have seen a briefcase in practical use in the past 10 years. When was the last time you went somewhere and somebody was carrying around a briefcase?
Well, Gary Bedore carries around a briefcase at the Kansas City Star.
No, that's not a briefcase.
What would you call that?
A briefcase is, it's hard-edged rectangle. And it's the type that you see lawyers use. They slam it down on the table and they open it up and take their documents out. That is a briefcase. The modern version of briefcases are not the same. It needs to have a handle. It's usually going to be made of nice leather. That's a briefcase.
Hmm. Yeah, I
refuse to believe that John Calipari even owns a briefcase. You're a journalist who operates with some level of integrity. So I don't know. If you're starved for content, maybe you could dive into that story just a little bit. But we got enough to talk about anyway. So I appreciate the pull-up question, and thanks for allowing Derek and I to brag about how athletic we are. I'm assuming you can do many pull-ups, can't you?
I have never attempted one since, like, I don't know, elementary school, so I legitimately have zero clue.
If you can do a push-up, you can do a pull-up, right? Is that a fact?
Pull-ups are way harder.
Are they?
Yeah, I think you'd have a lot more difficult time doing 10 pull-ups than you would 10 push-ups.
All right. Well, Scott, if you're looking to, I think pull-ups work the lats. So if you're looking to, get those eagle wings on your back, maybe throw some pull-ups into the routine. I know you're a fitness guy. Hey, Scott. So we were talking in the first hour about all of these different plans from every different league, right? You've got MLB, who's working towards something, even though it feels like they're at a bit of a stalemate. NBA, maybe a little bit farther along. The NFL feels pretty comfortable with where they're at. And I think from the outside perspective, it's easy to look at those leagues and say, whether they're, you know, on the MLB side of things or the NBA side of things, that it's encouraging to see these leagues working towards getting back to normalcy and getting sports going. Yet, when I look at college football and how they've handled things so far, which has kind of been a everybody do your own thing sort of operation, it feels like there is, at least for me, and maybe I'm the snowflake, right, that there's a relative level of unease with how things are going in college football, almost to the point of, like, I don't know what's going to go wrong, but something's going to go terribly wrong with college football, leaving it up to all of these different schools to kind of do whatever they see fit. Do you think there's some smoke there, or am I overreacting?
No, I think you're actually dead on, and it's kind of interesting that, you know, baseball would be the sport that makes the most sense to return, the most conducive to a return, given you can probably mitigate a ton of risk just in terms of spreading player to player. There's very, very little contact. I mean, if any at all in a lot of games. So I think that's a sport that would make sense, you know, right away. Hey, you know, let teams figure it out on their own. And yet that's one that I think, at least last I've seen, that the owners are being incredibly difficult. I question whether or not the owners even want to play a season. I think they may end up financially being better off just having no season rather than having to pay out player contracts, which I think is unfortunate. And, you know, you're kind of seeing the minor leagues decimated. But with football, to me, football is the sport that makes kind of the least sense to return, and that's at any level. That's college football, that's NFL football, because the teams are just so big. There's so much contact. I mean, basketball has a lot of contact, but, you know, you're talking about 10, 12 guys on a team, and if you want to even limit it further and who's getting in the games and stuff like that. And basketball is also a sport where you can take one guy out, you can take a few guys out, and it doesn't necessarily change the whole thing. You know, take three offensive linemen out, take five offensive linemen out of a team, that will completely decimate them and change, I mean, legitimately everything. And freshmen, freshmen don't play as much in college football. Same with rookies at the NFL. You know, sometimes they're plug-and-play guys. Sometimes guys just aren't ready to play. And, you know, when you start dealing with possibilities of, oh, someone tested positive and now I got to move the, you know, remove the whole offensive line from a game, that doesn't really fly at every school. Maybe some schools that works at, but others it doesn't. So generally speaking, I agree. The kind of up-in-the-air nature makes it really hard for me to necessarily understand. But I'll say this. I have yet to hear someone – all the people that I've heard talk and the people who speak definitively seem to be operating under the assumption that there's going to be football, including Les Miles, who said in a radio interview that there will, decisively, he said there will be football in the fall. So that's tough for me to see, but if that's the way we're headed, then, you know, I guess there will be football.
Yeah, I don't know how much I read into Les Miles speaking off the cuff in terms of those sorts of proclamations, and I'm not trying to be rude, I just... Les Miles is a kind of a talker, and I don't know exactly what all you're supposed to take seriously with him. But Bob Bowlsby, we mentioned a quote that he said earlier. He was talking about competitive advantages and saying that competitive equality is a mirage, is what he called it, because of the fact that some campuses have advantages, some towns have advantages, some regions have better recruiting than others do. So that the idea that some schools are going to be operating on different timelines, which therefore would give some schools and programs advantages over the other, that's no different than it's been in the past. But I think that that's that lacks context in the fact that those sorts of competitive advantages that he is speaking to are competitive advantages that you can't control. You can't control if Lawrence is nicer than Lubbock. You can't control if Texas has better recruits than Kansas does. But you can control when teams get back to work, and you can control exactly how long coaches are allowed to work with players. Those things have been controlled in the past, but it seems like this time around, for the first time, everybody gets to operate on their own schedule, which makes no sense to me.
Yeah, and I had not seen that exact comment, but to me, I mean, it's just completely bogus. Think about the teams that had some of their spring work put in. I don't remember. It's either Clemson or Ohio State got in like quite a few practices, and now they're going to get the same summer slate as anyone, or maybe as everyone, or maybe they get to come back a little early. You know, now all of a sudden you're talking about hours and hours and practices advantage for a great team. And look, I'm sure there are some not so great teams, or not some, you know, some programs that aren't powerhouse programs who will also be taking, you know, getting somewhat of an advantage because of how the schedule works out or whatever. But, you know, it kind of reminds me of the whole conversation with the NBA thing where, you know, I understand why certain people are mad and they don't want to change the rules and do something wacky. But the way I look at it, I don't think it's fair to just end the season and say, you know what, we're going into the playoffs because, you know, again, you talk about an advantage you can't control. Well, teams know they traditionally would have 20 more games to get back into the playoff picture. And you think about a team like the New Orleans Pelicans, who was surging, how is it fair to them to say, oh, now that you're healthy, you know, you don't even get a shot to play, whereas Memphis, who played an incredibly easy schedule and had a hard schedule coming down the stretch, you say, no, it doesn't matter. You won more of the easy games with the more complete roster, so even though you might have been fading and this other team was riding, we're just changing the rules. And to me, that's kind of what this point that Bowlsby apparently made gets back to, which is if there are competitive advantages set up and you know about them, you can plan against them. If you have an issue with your scheduling in basketball and travel is going to be difficult, you can rest guys. You can, you know, if a guy's banged up, you can change your rotation. If, you know, X, Y, and Z, you can focus on matchups. You can't do that when things come out of the blue like this. And so, no, I don't agree with his comment. I do agree with you, though, Nick. I think it's such a tricky situation. It's one that I'm not sure there are any great answers. And I think Matt said this last Friday, but I really worry about, you know, people getting back on campus and, you know, something happening, something severe. Actually, I'd say a lot of people have said this, you know, whether or not it's a death, a hospitalization or something, you know, no one wants that to happen, but it almost seems like with the number of people you're putting into this situation, it is going to happen. I don't know. That gives me a lot of pause when I think about college sports coming back.
Yeah, especially the idea that players aren't going to be tested regularly. And I know that some schools are going to be much more stringent on that than others. I know The Athletic posted a detailed piece on everything that LSU is going to do when they come back. But these conferences, they're not mandating that every person who comes into the facility be tested. And I know that there's varying schools of thought on whether everyone should be tested or only symptomatic individuals should be tested. But when you're talking about guys who are going to be spending months on end, not just together, but in confined spaces, engaging in physical contact, that to me would almost seem like a deal breaker if you're not going to be testing everybody. And even if I'm a player and I don't care, if I'm an 18-year-old kid and I say, I'm not worried about it, nobody I know has gotten it. If I get it, I'll be sick for 2 weeks and then I'll get over it. Maybe you don't worry as much, but these coaching staffs, which are making up dozens and dozens of people, many of whom are older and in the demographic that would be considered high risk, there would be serious concern that my safety isn't properly being taken into account when we're resuming sports.
Yeah, and plus the idea just of, you know, it's not always, and I'm not saying you're saying that, it's not always about you, right? Like I've seen some people say, well, we'll just assume we go out, we're taking the risk. And it's one of those things you have to understand that it's not just about you getting sick. It's about the potential for you to unknowingly, because you may be asymptomatic, spread it to people that it could seriously harm, spread it in general, and again, overwhelming medical systems in the country. And I'm not saying playing football is going to do that, but I am saying, you know, you hear stories about guys related to players and even, you know, younger people themselves. I was looking over that New York Times front page that just had the list of all these people who died, who had died from coronavirus. And yes, there were people in their 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. But you know what else? There were people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s who had also very unfortunately and tragically passed away, you know, due to this pandemic. So, there's so much risk involved. It's such a precarious situation. And just like you said, you get into the coaches and, you know, Kansas's coach is in his late 60s. That's, you know, I would want to be very protective if I were his family, if I were him. I want to be very careful, very protective, and you know, make absolutely certain that he's safe. And you know, obviously I feel the same way about people in my own family who are of an older age. Safety is paramount.
He is Scott Chasen, Fog.net, 24/7 Sports. Scott, up next, are you ready for this draft, this Game of Thrones draft, which you said you have done zero preparation for?
I've done an hour of prep work for it. Thank you for reminding me it was happening.
Awesome. We're doing that next. Scott Chasen, Game of Thrones football draft. Me, Derek Scott. This is Rock Chuck Sports Talk. Johnson, I am Nick Schwartz. Scott Chasen of Fog.net and 24/7 Sports is with us again. And it's time for another round of our football draft. Last week we did Avengers characters or Marvel Cinematic Universe characters. I lost again. What else have we done? We have done Star Wars characters. We have done animals. Today we are going to be drafting football teams based off Game of Thrones characters. Who won last week?
I did.
Again.
I mean, I have two wins. Scott has one. It's just you.
I don't think I'll ever win. I'll never.
I actually thought you had a good team last week, Nick. I actually thought when the voting started that you were going to beat both of us.
I did too. And then, like I said, I got a message from somebody on Twitter who said that the game is rigged against me. I am doomed before I even begin. People just want to see me lose.
Excuses.
I don't care. And that's not going to dissuade me from drafting the best team possible. I'm still putting a team up here. Okay. So we're going to do Game of Thrones characters. Same deal as always. Quarterback, running back, wide receiver, O-line, D-line, linebacker, defensive back, as well as a head coach. I think one thing to get out of the way before we get going here, no animals, which means no wolves and no dragons.
Those would have been my top two picks.
Are there any other animals even on the... I don't think so.
I mean, there's the dogs that, like, Ramsey has, that, like, the starting
dog. Yeah, so no animals.
Day.
Everything else is on the table. Because I took last again last week, I have first pick this week. What's the draft order, Derek?
Yeah, so it's you first, Scott second, me third, and as always, Serpentine.
Okay, so I have my pick written down on a piece of paper, and it's final. And I'm going to show it to you in a second. But just so we can have an honest conversation.
You know this is radio, right?
No, so you listen to me.
Okay.
So you know that I'm not going to change my pick based off of what you guys think. Okay. Do either one of you guys think, and you don't have to tell me who it is, do either one of you guys think there is any separation at the top, whether it be the number one person, top three, top five? Do you guys see like a tier of elite athletes that have separated themselves from the pack?
I would say I have three that I think are decisively better, and I have one in particular that if you don't pick Nick, you're not going to win this draft. You have to take this to win.
Okay, well, my pick, as I have written down on this piece of paper that I'm now going to show Derek, Arya Stark.
Nope.
With the first overall pick.
With what position?
Let's think about this. Let's think about this.
No, let's not. You just picked like a 10-year-old who's like 5'3".
She's like 16.
Okay.
She is easily.
What position, first of all?
I'm going to put her at running back. She's going to be my Christian McCaffrey.
Oh, my.
She is the most. She is the most agile person of all of Westeros. She is the quickest, most agile.
Yep.
She learned to fight without her eyes, without her eyeballs.
Okay.
She's proven to be a clutch performer who rises in the biggest moments. The climax of the series is her, and I'm not going to spoil it for anybody who's still getting caught up 2 years later. The climax of the series is her stepping up and making the play that nobody else. Nobody else could make. She fought one-on-one with Brienne of Tarth, and she held her own. We saw at the beginning, I mean, from the very beginning of the series, they highlighted her as a special person, and it's because of her athletic ability. She's on the run the entire time. She is a utility player. She is a big game playmaker. Arya Stark is my number one overall pick.
This is football, though.
All right.
Nobody's going to be able to get a hand on her. Everybody was trying to.
That fast?
Okay, then why did she never get caught? The whole series, people are after her. And she gets caught. She gets away. She squirms away from tackles. She knows how to evade defenders.
This is the worst first-round pick we've had of any of our drafts.
I didn't even do it. It was clear-cut for me.
My goodness.
That's amazing.
Who's up?
Scott's up.
So what's funny about that is in that analysis, Nick was like, she almost beat Brienne, and that was the argument for taking her number one, which I thought was amusing. Well, the board has opened up great for me, and I've also found that the fewest number of words you need to explain a pick, the better the pick is. So give me my quarterback, the Night King.
No!
Thank you.
See, I thought about taking Night King first overall, but I have issues with the Night King, and the biggest one is lack of mobility. I think.
Yeah, did you see him throw a spear and kill a dragon? Because he kind of did that.
Right, but he's like Peyton Manning, like 38-year-old Peyton Manning. Zero mobility. Like, yes, is he going to make plays? Sure, but if I've got a good defensive line and I'm pressuring him, I'm not convinced that he's going to be able to get away.
I'm with Scott, though. Yeah. I mean, I think you just hope you get a good offensive line. That was the number one on my board overall.
Yeah, it has to be. Yeah, I mean, he's a mythical guy. He can throw a spear made of ice a trillion yards in the air. I can't imagine this dude couldn't throw a football pretty far.
He was my number two. He was number two on my big board.
Okay, I am going to go ahead and take my offensive lineman. I'm going to take the Mountain.
Good
I mean,
pick.
Physically, like, we know why the Mountain.
Wait, are you getting pre-science experiment Mountain or post-science experiment?
Which I think better, honestly?
I think the one where he has full brain function would probably be better.
That's probably true for learning a playbook. Yeah, so I'll go with that one for my offensive line. And then I'm going to go linebacker. I want Khal Drogo. I think he would be a great linebacker.
Yeah, you nailed it. Those were my next two picks, actually.
What did Khal Drogo die of? Didn't he get like, some disease, like gangrene or something?
Yeah, but that was in, like, what year is this? Like the 300s
or something? I worry about his immune system. I think he's going to be on the mend a lot. Like, your best ability is your availability. And how, like, I don't. Khal Drogo's not going to play one 16-game season in his career. Not one.
He'll be so good in the 12 games he plays, though. It won't matter. All right, you're up again, Scott.
All right. For my next pick, I am also going to the offensive line, and I am taking 1-1, the Giant.
I knew you were going to do that.
Whatever he was.
Derek before Scott's going to draft the 20-foot Giant, and then the draft will be ruined.
Why is that ruined?
Because you're going to stomp all my players and score on every play.
I have the Night King and 1-1. What more do I need?
Did you know the actor who played 1-1 was actually 7'1"? So, like, it wasn't just, like, all CGI. I mean, to get to 20 feet it was, but
okay,
still a tall dude.
All right, so I've got back-to-back picks.
Yep.
You took the Mountain. I will take his brother, Sandor Clegane, the Hound, and I am going to put the Hound at linebacker. You don't like that?
I don't love that.
I don't have a ton of linebacker options. I don't.
I think he would have been a really good defensive lineman. I don't know if he's fast enough to play linebacker.
But I've got, that's a deeper position for me, so I feel like that's got more options if he doesn't. Whereas linebacker, I just don't think. I need a little bit of get up and go, you know? I need a little acceleration there, and I think he gives it to me. I want him roaming the middle.
That's fair. What's your other pick?
My second pick, I'm going to go offensive line. This might be an early pick, but this is an example of find your guy and get him. Don't wait around and hope he's there two rounds later. If you're in love with someone at that position, take him. Offensive line, I'm taking Hodor.
Yep.
Hold the door. He knows how to hold the defense at bay. Hodor, and he does it in the biggest moments. Again, I'm looking for guys who rise to the occasion. He certainly did that.
To your point, the actor who plays him, so I'm assuming Hodor in the show, is the same way. He's 7 feet tall.
That's right. Size.
Oh, dude.
All right, Scott, you're up again.
Well, Nick, I had a couple choices there, and if they were both on the board, I was going to go somewhere else, but now I need to go D-line because I'm running out of names. I will take Brienne of Tarth. I think she'd be a good defensive lineman, depending, you know, 3-4, 4-3. I think she's versatile. If she's allowed to bring her sword, she'll kill a lot of offensive linemen.
I don't think you can bring your sword in a football game, but she's actually 6'3", so I like that pick. I actually had her on the offensive line because she's good at protecting
people.
I had
her at quarterback.
But I think D-line would have been good, too. That's interesting.
Big Ben?
Huh. That's not where I'd put her.
Good luck taking her down.
I like that pick, though, for Scott. All right, I got two picks. I'm going to get some skill players. I need quickness. I need speed at running back. Who trained Arya Stark?
That would be
Cyrio Forel. What? No. No, I meant... okay. I'm taking Cyrio Forel.
Oh, the little pansy looking.
What do you mean?
The guy with the wooden stick, dude.
He like beats up like knights with a wooden sword.
He died in season one, didn't he?
Well, because he had like a 5-on-1.
Okay, yeah, one and done. He's gonna
super quick.
He's gonna retire after 4 years like Gil Sayers.
Don't interrupt your opponent when he's making a mistake. Let Derek go, on the track.
All right, and then wide receiver, I am gonna take Oberyn, known as the Red Viper. He's quick. He's powerful. Maybe gets a little too much in his head and maybe doesn't close as well as you'd like, but I like the physical traits there.
Okay.
All right. Those aren't bad picks, but you left the best skill position player on the board, and now I am going to take him and put him at wide receiver. Can't imagine how great it would be to have the Night King thrown to this guy. Give me Grey Worm at my wideout.
Yeah, I like that pick. He's a little undersized, but I kind of see him, as a Stephon Diggs. Great athleticism. He's going to, talk about
so
route running.
Skinny, though.
Talk about route running.
Get lit up.
That guy is disciplined in his routes.
He will listen to anything the coach says. Mm-hmm. He'll be great into his playbook. So, yeah, I do agree with that.
And in an era of diva wide receivers, you don't got to worry about that with Grey Worm. I like that pick a lot, Scott. Okay, so back-to-back picks again for me. I'm running out of picks in this regard at this position, so I'm going to go ahead and take my guy D-line. I'm going to go with Tormund Giantsbane.
That was my next pick. Good job.
I knew I had to take him because after him, I don't know. I don't have anybody left at DL. And as we learned last week, I started drafting players because my draft board ran out. So not going to let that happen this time around. So now I got to go back offense. Do I want to pick a quarterback? Do I want to pick a wide receiver? I'm going to go wide receiver. And yes, this is the antithesis of what Scott just did at wide receiver. And some would call him Grey Worm's nemesis. I am going to take Dario Naharis my wide receiver spot. Great athlete, great agility, and a fierce warrior.
Who is he again?
The guy, Daenerys' love interest.
Sort of.
The assassin.
Okay.
Yeah, he got he got actor changed. Among seasons.
They just like came back from like season 3 to season 4 and it's a completely different actor playing him.
Yeah, and they didn't even address
it.
Gotcha. I like that. I actually had him as one of my top defensive backs as well and a receiver. All right, Scott, you're up.
All right. I'm going Coach. Simple pick. Give me it's been a minute, so I got to make sure I get the name right here. Is it Tyrion?
Tyrion Lannister.
Well, which one?
Short guy.
Okay, yeah, that's Tyrion. Yeah.
Okay, Tyrion. Give me Tyrion.
Good way to describe him. Short guy. All right, you got back-to-backs now, Derek.
Okay. So I need a coach, quarterback, D-line, and a DB. But both of you guys have taken your D-line, so I don't feel like I have to really hold out on that one. Let's go with DB. I will take Jaqen H'ghar. He's quick. He is an assassin. He can change his face and really freak out the wide receiver at the line of scrimmage. So I think that'll be a good one at DB. And then, oh, man, what do I want to do at quarterback? At quarterback, I'm going to go with Jorah Mormont. He's wise. He's a bit older.
A lot older.
Strong enough. That's fine.
Frail.
I'm good with signing Tom Brady for a couple of years.
He has got a degenerative skin disease, Derek, and you're going to try. By the way,
nobody's going to want to touch him.
It's contagious. What about his players? What about
exactly.
His offensive linemen?
He'll just play shotgun the whole time, and if anybody tackles him, they know what they're getting into.
You're going to have to change the ball out after every play.
Well, I'll deal with that when
there
we get
there. There are more concerns with that. What do they call it? Grayscale than there are with COVID-19. Unbelievable.
All right, you're up, Scott.
Derek, who was your first pick you made?
Like overall?
No. In that last.
Oh, Jaqen H'ghar.
Yeah, you know, I thought it was funny when you said, like, he's literally an assassin. Like, that's always a term you hear in football. Like, this guy is an assassin. He's, like, literally drafted an assassin. Okay, I need a linebacker here. I'm going to go with Braun. I actually really like Braun.
Yeah.
I think he's a cool dude. I think he brings a swagger. And just, again, anyone who's killed a lot of people is going to be good in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I had Braun as one of my top wide receivers.
I did too. You just think he's cocky, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Love the glory. But I think linebackers.
Okay,
good too.
So I need a quarterback, I need a defensive back, and I need a coach. I'm going to go first with my defensive back, and I'm going to take Ramsey Snow. And
not
talk
Bolton?
About Ramsey. Yeah, yeah, whatever.
Well,
Ramsey
I don't know which
Bolton,
one it is.
Ramsey
so.
Snow. You talk about being a villain, being a trash talker. He is like the Jalen Ramsey. Right? Ramsey Snow.
Nobody on your team is going to like him.
I don't need anybody to like him.
Locker room.
Cam Newton got into a fight with Josh Norman.
And they released him. They traded him.
Yeah, but Josh Norman was still really good. So it didn't change the fact that they still were able to find success on the field with him. So I think he's a good athlete. I think he is a villain. And I think he's going to be able to get into the heads of his opponents. That is a big, big trait that I'm looking for. I want you to be able to play mind games with the receiver. He's the perfect guy to do that. And now I've got to go with my quarterback. And I don't really know which direction to go here because most of the good ones, I think, are off the board.
Well, there's only two. But...
Yeah, but those were my top two.
Oh.
So, I just want him on my team. I want him on my team. I don't know if he's a great thrower, but I think he'll find a way. He's still on the board. I can't believe it. Jon Snow. He's just, you take
yeah.
He is my Tim Tebow. I don't know if he's going to be a great thrower of the ball, but he is a winner, and he's somebody I want on my sideline.
I think that's going to be one of those picks where people are going to see you have Jon Snow at quarterback, and they're going to want to vote for you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he is the best quarterback option, but I think he's the most popular. Like you said, he's Tim Tebow.
Right, exactly. So
yeah.
I'm playing the popularity contest here, but again, he's a winner, and I just want the intangibles.
That was actually going to be my next pick, and I'm kind of at an impasse now because I don't like basically any of the guys left on my board. I will say this, Nick. I think your best quarterback is Arya Stark. I would have actually put her at quarterback if I were going to take her.
Hands aren't big enough to hold the ball.
Yeah, and she can't see over the line, man.
Well,
I got Hodor as my lineman. She's not going to be able to throw anything.
Yeah, well, she can jump on his back, but running back. I really don't like any of my options, and the guy I'm going to pick only has one hand, which is definitely
liability.
It's a tough fit at that position, but I got to go with Jamie. He's got agility, he's got a little bit of swagger to him, and he kind of brings some, I guess, coaching acumen, if you think about it. His dad and his sister / love interest are both very talented at strategizing and scheming, and so they can kind of hop onto the coaching staff, like when a college recruits a kid and hires his brother as an assistant.
Okay, all right. I have my last two picks. I need D-line and a head coach. I'm going to go on the D-line, Robert Baratheon. He's big. I mean, in his heyday, he was one of the fiercest warriors, so I like that on the D-line. And then as a head
drinking
coach...
Drinking problem.
Whatever. As a head coach, I'm going to go with the one-eyed Raven. I don't want Bran. Bran is lame. I want the older one-eyed Raven, the previous one.
You.
But he can see the past, present, and future. So,
yeah,
cool. Good for me. Okay, Scott, your last pick.
No, that's great. I had Bran so low on my board just because
I didn't
want to
take Bran.
That
yeah.
guy.
Exactly.
So I'm with you there. And I think there's one great coaching option left for Nick. Excited to see how he screws that up. Defensive back. I don't like anyone left. Give me Barrick Dondarrion, the Lord of Light, the eye patch. I'm pretty sure he's come back to life a million times. Doesn't matter how many times you burn him, he's going to get back out there and make a play. Don't love the pick, but he's all I have left.
Okay, you thought there was one good selection left for my coaches. My top two coaches are on the board. I couldn't be more thrilled with
this.
I think
there's two picks left, personally.
So you said you didn't want to take Bran because you didn't want to be that guy, Scott. Derek, you said you wanted to take the one-eyed Raven over Bran. And you know what I could do here. And you know what the fallout would be. I could just take Bran knowing that people will respect the Bran pick over the one-eyed Raven.
I don't think they will. I think people hate Bran.
I'm not going to do that because I don't need trickery to win my
game. You have a pander pick here that if you make, you will win with Jon Snow. This guy is one of the most popular characters in the series.
I know what you're thinking. You're thinking I could take Daenerys Targaryen.
No.
I think the way the last season went.
And there would be way too much like thoughts of the quarterback undermining the coach.
Well,
with Jon Snow and Targaryen.
The head coach and the quarterback
sleeping together. Dude, what a storyline that would be. Oh my gosh, that would be fantastic. But I'm not going there. I'm just going with a general leader. Like a guy you look back on and what is one of the biggest things you would say about him? No nonsense. He is a leader and he's got tons of experience. I'm going with Tywin Lannister.
I think that was a good pick. I thought you could have gone. I don't know if this is who you were talking about, Scott, with Davos.
No.
Kind of level-headed.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't want a coach who goes out of his way to remind everybody how dumb he is. Every scene Davos was in, I've never claimed to be a smart man. It's like, hey, I need you to be a little heady here. I need you to be able to analyze and look a few steps ahead.
I do like that pick, though.
All right, so our team's...
I think Littlefinger would have been the pick there.
Nobody would have respect him. Everybody hated Littlefinger.
I think people like
most hated man in Westeros.
Littlefinger is the scout in your system who's leaking information to Adam Schefter.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And when I find out it's him...
Littlefinger is the reason they killed Bolton. They wouldn't have killed... Is it Ramsay Bolton without Littlefinger?
Yeah, he was also responsible for the death of Catelyn and Ned Stark, so...
Yeah, where do you want to go? Gets results.
In a way, yeah. But he's also traitorous, and I don't want him anywhere near my organization. Okay, those are our teams. We'll put them up on Twitter, let you guys decide. And I'm assuming whatever draft we do next week, I'll have the first pick again because I will assuredly take last. Scott, great job today. Thank you for joining us once again.
Thanks for having me.
All righty. That is our Game of Thrones football draft. He is Scott Chasen. Check out his work at fog.net and 24/7 Sports. With Derek Johnson, I'm Nick Schwert. This is Rock Chuck Sports Talk.
You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert and Derek Johnson on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
So this may be something to monitor. Connor Mitchell of the Lawrence Journal-World reporting today that KU Athletics in April lost a ruling in former football coach David Beatty's suit against KU. It could be considered as evidence in the school's NCAA's infraction case. Connor Mitchell goes on to explain why that matters as it pertains to KU's NCAA case. First, Beatty and his legal team argue that the depositions give credence to his argument that KU concocted low-level charges against him to justify not paying his contract buyout. Here's where it gets interesting. Carol Cartwright is the chair of the NCAA Infractions Committee, and she agreed that it was possible. KU, on the other hand, said that the deposition should not be included since Jeff Long and the two former coaches had already been interviewed in KU's case. So they're basically saying, you already interviewed him. You shouldn't be allowed to include these other depositions in the case that you've already formed against us. Cartwright said that that argument was invalid and the depositions could provide new evidence. Cartwright definitively said that a relatively new 2018 NCAA bylaw, which we talked about ad nauseum, the one that says that any evidence that's found in court cases can be applied, the NCAA doesn't have to go do all their own digging. They can take previously found facts from other investigations and apply them to their cases. This means that whatever committee ultimately hears KU's infractions case now has evidence from Beatty's suit to consider in their deliberations. This is all from Connor Mitchell of the LJ World. But perhaps more concerning, he says, for KU fans is that the ruling likely opens the door to the hearing committee considering evidence from the federal Adidas trial when it rules on KU's alleged basketball violations. TJ Gasanola has been subpoenaed in Beatty's lawsuit and will be deposed at some point in the near future. So what that means is that even though TJ Gasanola went to that federal courtroom in the Southern District of New York and testified that KU and Bill Self had no knowledge of the payments, the illicit payments that he was making to players and the family of players, he is now going to be deposed again, what, almost 2 years later. And we could say he's probably going to stick to the truth because, well, if he comes out and lies, then it can be found that he lied in the court of law and he would face further punishments for that. But if you're KU, do you really want this guy going and talking again?
No.
If you're comfortable with whatever level of information he either said or didn't say in that courtroom, no matter how you feel about it, one thing that you can almost guarantee is that they don't want him talking anymore, just in case the story changes a little bit. Because if that happens, then there's new evidence that could ultimately hurt KU in the long run.
No, he's going scorched earth at this point. And like,
talking about David Beatty.
Yeah. It just feels like there's no way that KU is going to be able to kind of settle that down. At this point, it's just like, you had your chance to pay me. I'm just going to take you down now.
Yeah, that's not good news for KU. Mm-hmm. And I'd be a little worried about what this guy could potentially say in this deposition.
Because
here's what's going to be different about it, and I'll let you go, but mm-hmm. What's going to be different is the questions are going to be different. They're not going to be coming from the standpoint of trying to figure out whether or not KU was defrauded. These questions now are going to be questions that Beatty's lawyers think help their case, so it's going to be a completely different line of questioning that Gasanola will see compared to the one that he saw in the Southern District of New York.
Do you think it's interesting at all that, because we know like Beatty got offered an analyst job or something at Texas after he was let go of KU. So like obviously, I mean, you don't just go from being a head coach in a Power 5 school to like not being able to get any job at all. I wonder though, with how deep he is going into this case, like if you are Texas and fast forward, I don't know, let's say this is over in a year. And you have an opening again for like an offensive analyst or whatever he was going to get hired as. Are you sitting there reconsidering that? Like, does this make you unhirable if you're David Beatty to get to a point where you are basically ratting out the school? And like, I get it. He's trying to get his money back, but like, he's taking that next step. Is he not from going from, hey, I'm trying to get my money. Hey, I'm trying to kind of give you a middle finger. And now I'm also venturing over to the side of, I'm trying to screw your basketball program too.
Yeah, but
like, would you not view that as a head coach as, why would I hire this guy? If I fire him, he's going to like unearth my dirty laundry.
Yes, but you got to realize where he is coming from. And what he is saying is, well, what do I have to lose? They screwed me over. I have every right to defend myself. And furthermore, you would say this, that this is a lawsuit. What did you expect? That everybody was going to be nice and friendly to one another? This is what happens. Suits, things are ugly. Accusations are thrown around. And furthermore, if you're trying to win this lawsuit and saying that you were wronged, you are going to turn over every single stone in an attempt to help you win that. I mean, $3 million is nothing to scoff at. And what he is going to say, and whether it costs him his career or not, I don't know. But what he is saying is, what other option do I have? Do I roll over and just take my losses, knowing that if I don't do this, I got no chance of winning. And if I have no chance of winning, then I've wasted 2-3 years of my life for what?
No, it's more so the venture over to basketball. Like, that almost seems like...
But it's not David Beatty saying we need to interview TJ Gasanola, right? Mm-hmm. It's just lawyers. Beatty doesn't know TJ Gasanola. David Beatty's never met him. He's never talked to him. It's his lawyers saying, we got to win this case. And if we're going to win it, we're going to have to get a little dirty. We're going to have to roll our sleeves up a little bit. This is how lawsuits... So you might be right, though. Other schools may say, I don't want to touch him. But you're saying if he stopped short of getting TJ Gasanola involved, then all of a sudden everybody would be lining up to hire him as an analyst? I think the teams who... If he was really offered a job by Tom Herman at Texas, if there are coaches who want to hire him, that means they have good relationships with him, and I don't think that'll change. But, yeah, it's getting messy, and I think we all knew it was going to get messy, but now when you're implicating basketball in a pretty big way, it's a pretty bad piece of information for KU and the basketball program. All right, that's going to do it for Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Thanks to Scott Chasen for coming on today. Thanks to you for tuning in. For Derek Johnson, I'm Nick Schwert. We'll see you tomorrow at 3:00.